Hello there. Today is Friday, July 12th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, President Trump backs down but says he won't give up on counting non-U.S. citizens in the country. New Orleans braces for a storm that could bring devastating flooding.
You just have to worry about how much water the weather will push in the river, so that's a good reason to be safe, because the river's been really high lately, so they opened the spillway, so better safe than sorry.
Also ahead, Taylor Swift tries to shake it up or shake it off. It's all on today's International Edition. U.S. President Donald Trump ended his quest on Thursday to add a contentious citizenship question to the 2020 census, but insisted he was not retreating from his fight against illegal immigration and said the government would obtain the data by combing through federal records.
I am hereby ordering every department and agency in the federal government to provide the Department of Commerce with all requested records regarding the number of citizens and non-citizens in our country. They must furnish all legally accessible records in their possession immediately.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi on Trump's latest plan to account for non-citizens in the country.
The Supreme Court destroyed the administration's argument that the question was needed to support the Voting Rights Act. Really? Including their rationale was based on a contrived pretext.
Trump's plan to add the question to the census ran into a roadblock 2 weeks ago when the Supreme Court did, in fact, rule against the administration, which had said new data on citizenship would help better enforce, as she said, the Voting Rights Act, which protects minority rights. The court ruled in considering the litigation by challengers that that rationale was contrived. U.S. authorities on Sunday will begin arresting at least 2,000 immigrant families eligible for deportation in a nationwide series of raids long threatened by President Trump. Trump forewarned of the planned operation in a June 17th Twitter message, but it was delayed partly because of disagreements within the administration. It was confirmed Thursday by Acting Director of Citizenship and Immigration Services, Ken Cuccinelli.
They're absolutely going to happen. There's approximately 1 million people in this country with removal orders. Of course, that isn't what ICE will go after in this, but that's the pool of people who've been all the way through the due process chain.
But Democrats like Maryland Senator Dick Durbin are outraged.
Thousands of individuals, families, and children will once again be displaced from their homes and placed in detention facilities. And the administration, of course, will blame someone else for it.
Well, joining us to talk more about it, Guadalupe Correa Cabrera, associate professor at the Schar School of Policy and Government at George Mason University in the state of Virginia. What do you make of these upcoming planned raids this coming Sunday?
I don't know how they are going to accomplish these raids and what are the criteria to go after specific people. What I know is that some of these people applied for asylum and they didn't show up for their appointments at the court. And others have probably overstayed. Things are, moving so fast. And are very unclear. My guess is that it has to do with the applications for asylum, since the discussion has been centering on asylum seekers, and it seems to be a way to deter more families to come to the United States and apply for asylum.
What do you expect that they will do with these people? Will they literally just take them across the border, or will they put them in some sort of a detention situation, which already seems to be kind of in crisis at the border as it is, with overcrowding and terrible conditions that we're hearing about?
That is also a very, very good question. Every case is a different one, and it would make a lot of sense if we talk about resources just to send them back to their country. But because of the very unclear as well agreement that they have with Mexico, they can probably send them to Mexico or they can detain them for a longer time. Meanwhile, they revise their files. It's also not clear how they're going to do this and if general criteria is going to apply to everybody or different cases are going to be receiving different treatment. If people are going to be sent to their countries of origin, if they're just going to be dropped in Mexico, or if they're going to be put in detention.
You're in Mexico right now. You've been traveling along the border. What's the most concerning thing you've seen as you're traveling along the border.
Some of the most concerning events that I have seen of families on the Mexican side of the border in very dangerous cities such as Nuevo Laredo, Tamaulipas, Ciudad Juarez in Mexico. This will put people under great risk with extending the migration protection protocols, the Stay in Mexico program. I've seen a greater number of transcontinental immigrants, particularly those coming from Africa, and also with their futures uncertain and the existence of some raids on Mexican border and Mexico's northern border in several cities.
All right, Guadalupe Correa Cabrera, Associate Professor at the Schar School of Policy and Government at George Mason University. Thanks for being with us. Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. Britain is accusing Iran of trying to block an oil tanker in the Gulf. Former Vice President Joe Biden says President Trump's foreign policy has damaged U.S. standing in the world. Ukraine-Russian tensions spark a human rights debate. And the Islamic State remains unpredictable as it regroups. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. France adopted a pioneering tax on internet giants like Google, Amazon, and Facebook on Thursday, despite U.S. threats of new tariffs on French imports. The final vote in favor of the tax in the French Senate came hours after the Trump administration announced an investigation into the tax under the provision used last year to probe China's technology policies. That led to tariffs on $250 billion worth of Chinese imports. Joining us now to talk more about it is Paris-based journalist Catherine Field. Catherine, what is this all about? It's confusing.
What it's all about is the so-called GAFA tax. And the GAFA, of course, is an acronym for Google, Apple, Facebook, and Amazon. These are the big digital giants who base themselves in low-tax havens such as Ireland or Luxembourg, and from there they sell all their wares, they make all their money, and only pay a very small amount of corporate tax in that country where they're based. So, and that is what not just France, but also the EU and also America has been talking about some way of getting a handle on these big companies. Do they need to be broken up? Do they need to be paired back? But mainly, from the French perspective, they need to pay tax. And this is what the French have done. The French Parliament has now passed a law making it compulsory for these big companies to pay tax on any of their profits, their revenue that they make here in France. Now, the first reaction to that from the American side was, heck, hang on, stop. This is, we're going in for a Section 301 investigation here. This doesn't seem right. And you can't just do this. France just can't go and do this unilaterally on its own. And so the response has been, well, perhaps there will be tariffs from other areas, such as EU tariffs, which Donald Trump has been talking about, from the other side. So it's, on the one side, it's a very confusing picture because these are very strange, huge digital giants. On the other side, it seems quite clear. The French government says we have got to get some sort of tax revenue from these big companies that are making so much money selling their goods and their services in France.
What does Emmanuel Macron say about all this?
Well, he's absolutely delighted by it. He thinks this is the only fair thing to do, given that there is no international corporate tax structure in place to be taxing these big giants. What he's been saying is, and he's made it quite clear, and again, the finance minister of France made it quite clear again today, is that no one else is doing this. But if someone else does do it, for example, if the OECD does it, or the G20 finance chiefs of the countries bring in some sort of tax, then France will back down from this. It will take it away. Let's think back just last month at the G20 finance chiefs were meeting in Japan. They said there was a need to come up with a global system to tax these internet giants, but no one can decide how to do it. So Emmanuel Macron is saying, well, until you get yourselves all sorted out, we're putting in this tax, and to heck with it, someone's got to break the mold. Someone's got to stand out and do it.
There are some that are saying that Trump is trying to drive a wedge between Macron and his partners in the EU. Is that working? And would that ever happen?
It would happen, and it is happening quite clearly, because, for example, you've got cases of Ireland where Facebook and Google are tax-based, and you've got Luxembourg, which is where Amazon is based, and they don't want any of this big global taxation. They're quite happy with, for example, the tax that they're getting in from Facebook and Google, for example. So they don't want anyone else to get involved. They've got a perfectly good economic model going. They take in the taxes from these companies, and everything fine there. On the other side, you've got countries like Austria, the United Kingdom, Germany, Italy, and Spain that are saying, well, yeah, we've got to get a slice of this. This has all got to be done properly, and we do really need to have this new international tax structure. So it would be very easy for Donald Trump to split up that group because they are so separated. The ideas, the thoughts, the processes are all so divorced from each other that it would be very difficult to see how they could come together. There is so much disunity on this measure. It really does look as though the meeting of the G7 finance ministers that will be here in France next week, that this could actually overshadow what was meant to be really a coming together of finance ministers and central bankers to put together a communique for the G7 summit later this summer. It looks as though that meeting next week might actually be overshadowed by disagreements within all the OECD countries of what needs to be done for taxing this digital economy, which is quite difficult because there are no frontiers when it comes to the digital economy.
All right. Paris-based journalist Catherine Field, thanks for explaining it all to us. Nervous New Orleans residents prepared to flee as Tropical Storm Barry closed in on Thursday. It was headed toward New Orleans on Thursday, and the forecast is to gain strength and become this year's first Atlantic hurricane, the latest in a long line of storms to strike that city. National Weather Service meteorologist Benjamin Schott says with the forecasts calling for extreme rain and more flooding ahead of the storm's predicted landfall by early Saturday, as we said, the first Atlantic hurricane of 2019.
We cannot pump our way out of the water levels and the waterfalls that are expected to hit the city of New Orleans. We need you to understand this and, again, be prepared to shelter in place.
New Orleans Mayor LaToya Cantrell talking to residents. Here's National Weather Service meteorologist Benjamin Schott.
So with that coming in, we're talking about amounts anywhere 10 to 15, with locally higher amounts pushing 20 inches with rainfall over the course of Friday, Saturday, and maybe even lingering into Sunday.
Well, the American Red Cross is also preparing for whatever needs may come about. And joining us now to talk more about that is American Red Cross spokesperson Stephanie Wagner. Thanks for being with us. So what are you all doing to get ready with residents who may need your services?
We respond to an average of about 62,000 disasters a year. So preparing for an incident like this, any magnitude, is something we do consistently. The state of Louisiana has really been in the bullseye since about Monday as far as impact is concerned. So we've really been standing up operations since then. And that includes things like organizing supplies, putting them in locations across the state that are going to be easily accessible, getting volunteers set up, making sure that we have enough workforce to be able to handle any kind of needs that may come about, both before, during, and after the storm. We've also been staging some of our emergency response vehicles in kind of specific locations across the state. So again, they're in a safe place and they are easily accessible. As far as the impact is concerned, it looks like it's going to be primarily across the state of Louisiana. It looks like the storm is going to kind of come on shore across South Louisiana and make its way due north across the entire state.
I would imagine you're prepared to start opening up shelters if people need a place to stay and go to get away from potential flooding, which it sounds like would be the biggest concern right now?
Absolutely. So as of today, we have one Red Cross shelter that is open, and this is what we call an evacuation center, an evacuation shelter. So it's meant to sustain folks for a short period of time, and then should the need arise, if they can't go home afterwards, if there's a really significant impact to the community, then we can transition into more of a long-term shelter. So we have the one emergency evacuation shelter that is open, but we have several that are on standby across the state. Parishes, which are counties in any other state, do operate their own shelters as well. So in addition to what we have going on, there are other shelters that are across the state and either on standby or have opened up.
I know New Orleans, obviously we know New Orleans, was just devastated by Hurricane Katrina, and by some indications has never fully 100% recovered. How concerned is that city?
I think there is definitely some concern across the city of New Orleans. Unfortunately, we did have a weather system pass through yesterday, which dropped almost 9 inches of rain over just an hour. We also had some tornadoes and waterspouts across the area. So New Orleans has already been hit once. But I think what that did was it made people realize that they really do need to prepare. There's been a little bit of, I think there's just fatigue because there are so many natural disasters that happen in Louisiana. Mm-hmm. But after what happened yesterday, people are really taking it seriously and they are preparing. They are getting their emergency kits together. They are looking at evacuation options should they become mandatory, or even optional evacuations should they be issued. And they're talking with their families. They're creating their plan, so they do know what to do and can kind of leave at a moment's notice, knowing that the impacts from the storm are going to be coming in very quickly over the next 36 hours.
All right, American Red Cross spokesperson Stephanie Wagner. One of the worst hurricanes to swamp New Orleans in modern history, Katrina did hit the city directly in August of 2005, leaving close to 2,000 people dead. You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live, anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. voanews.com.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
VOA's International Edition continues. Courses in Islamic studies are being offered now at many colleges and universities in the United States, and it's not just Muslims signing up for those classes. As VOA's Ali Orokzai notes in this report narrated by Zenhan Hamdard.
Northern Virginia Community College outside Washington, D.C. began offering classes in Islamic studies in 2002 after the September 11 attacks. Professor Dawood Nasimi says since then, there has been a growing interest in these courses among non-Muslims.
Non-Muslims, when they hear about Islam, especially when they are affected by the media, when media talks about Islam in a negative way, some of them, they say, well, I just became curious. I want to know what this religion is all about. How come this religion, encourages so much negativity or so much, fighting or terrorism or violence? You know, they become curious and they want to come take this course.
Comments by students taking Islamic studies courses bear this out.
I took this class so that I could become more knowledgeable about Islam and not just listen to the media and how it just paints Islam in like a bad picture. And then I've also made like new Muslim friends in that class who also like helped me understand the concepts and like the traditions better.
Well, before high school, I had no knowledge of the religion whatsoever, but then I started to make a lot of Muslim friends throughout high school, and it was just being around them, being around their families. I always had respect for the culture, but I wanted to gain a deeper understanding of it.
As part of the class syllabus, students are sent to a local mosque to observe how Muslims pray and practice Islam.
My experience today was very interesting. I'm not used to everybody having their single prayer, because I'm from a church, so we all pray together.
Coming to mosque today, I've learned that Muslims are not like people who are like private to themselves. Like, they reach out to the communities and non-Muslim communities.
The last prayer of the day is Isha.
Leading a presentation about Islamic prayers, the mosque's imam stresses the importance for people to educate themselves about different religions.
The message for everyone here is that this is a mosque and it is for everyone. Followers of other religions are also welcome here.
For Ali Orobzai in Annandale, Virginia, Bejan Hamdard, VOA News.
Well, in her first public appearance since discovering her master's songs were in the hands of someone she is not a fan of, Taylor Swift didn't directly address the issue, but she did play music from that rich catalog, including songs from her groundbreaking sophomore album to her first full-blown pop project to her latest title. Swift sang her new song, You Need to Calm Down, live for the first time at the event. On the song, Swift addresses her own haters, but also calls out those who attack the LGBTQ community. It will appear on her new album, Lover, to be released August 23rd. Some viewers on social media felt like Swift was throwing shade, but the pop star seemed to shake off the drama with a fun, entertaining performance that came 2 weeks after she wrote that she was sad and grossed out that her music catalog now belongs to Scooter Braun, who she accuses of subjecting her to years of incessant and manipulative bullying. You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thanks so much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Greg Dave Magnus. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Hello, this is James Butte, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Or you can call us on 001-202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. That's Daybreak Africa at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour.
Whoa.
Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA, or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world.
Ah.
Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States remains deeply concerned by the gross human rights abuses and violations detailed in a recent United Nations Human Rights Report on Venezuela. The report illustrates the depth of the despair and humanitarian crisis in Venezuela. It confirms that the former regime of Nicolas Maduro and its security forces are committing gross violations of human rights against the Venezuelan people, including depriving them of their basic rights and freedoms through systematic violent repression, torture, and intimidation. One of the most unsettling statistics is that the former Maduro regime security forces, including the Special Action Forces, killed at least 5,287 people in 2018 and another 1,569 by mid-May 2019. According to the report, many of these killings may constitute extrajudicial executions. The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Michelle Bachelet, called the number of killings shockingly high. This report follows the alleged torture and killing of Capitan de Corbeta Rafael Acosta Arevalo, a Venezuelan naval officer who died while in arbitrary detention in custody of Maduro's thugs and their Cuban minders on June 29, 2019. This was not the first time the former Maduro regime used violence against its political prisoners. On October 8, 2018, Councilman Fernando Albán was also murdered while in regime custody. No dictatorship lasts forever, declared State Department spokesperson Morgan Ortegas. Venezuela will soon be free, and those responsible for abuses and violations of human rights in Venezuela will be held accountable. Ms. Ortegas called on the international community to condemn the illegitimate Maduro regime and stand together to fight against its willful disregard for human rights. She added, "We appeal to the countries that have not yet formally recognized interim President Juan Guaido to do so as soon as possible and withdraw any lingering support for the former Maduro regime's de facto hold on power."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
This is VOA News. I'm